Come and be a part of that if you can be. That'll be at 4 o'clock this afternoon. We'll have our last marriage class. Problems and trials, disappointments in life, and discouragements are all just a part of life's experiences. And everyone, I think, understands that and recognizes that. That if you live very long, you begin to realize, I face some problems and I go through trials and there are discouragements and disappointments in life. And when those stormy winds begin to blow, you might begin to raise the question, what do I do? What am I supposed to do now? How do I deal with the problems? And you may feel at times that your world is just turned upside down, and your enemies even rejoice when they see that you are down and you're out. You may have those who are against you, and you think at least, if it be true or not, you think that others are rejoicing over that. Do you ever feel like that you don't know who you can trust anymore? And particularly if those that you have confidence in that have betrayed that confidence, and you begin to feel like, I don't know who I can trust now. I don't know where I turn. I don't know. Well, the psalmist, David, was in such turmoil here in our psalm to which you have turned in the 11th psalm. It is a circumstance where an enemy is pursuing him. Who the enemy is, we're not sure. Perhaps Saul or Absalom. But an enemy is pursuing him. His friends are telling him in this psalm he needs to flee. Just run away. Get out of here, David. After all, there's nothing you can do. Is the point the friends are making. And yet in this psalm, David put his trust and his confidence in God, in Jehovah, and there he rests and there he stays. So let's turn to the 11th psalm. If you haven't already turned there, turn there with me and let's read the psalm together. It just has the 7 verses, short psalm, but packed full of information. To the chief musician, Psalm of David. In the Lord I will put my trust. How can I say to my soul, flee as a bird to the mountain? For look, the wicked bend their bow. They make ready their arrow on a string, that they may shoot secretly at the upright in heart. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold. His eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. Upon the wicked, he will rain coals of fire. Fire and brimstone and burning wind shall be the portion of their cup. For the Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness. His countenance beholds the upright. What a psalm. Let's analyze the psalm and then we'll come back and make some application from it. Let's look at verses 1 through 3. David's friends advise him under the circumstance to flee. What is the circumstance? We'll talk about that in just a moment. But he is being pursued by his enemy. Things are upside down. Life is in turmoil. Perhaps Saul or Absalom are his enemy that is under consideration. But in verses 1 through 3, his friends come to him, not his enemies, but these are friends. Perhaps righteous and godly people. Implied in verse 3, it is godly people who are saying this. His friends come to him and they advise him, David, what you need to do is flee. So here's what you need to do, verse 1. He said, in the Lord I'll put my trust, in contrast to what his friends were saying to him. That trust is described beginning at verse 4 through 7. But he starts on the note saying, in the Lord I will put my trust. And how can I say to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain? Apparently that's what his friends were saying to him. David, what you need to do under the circumstance is run away. You need to get out of here because there's nothing you can do. Here is why, David, you need to do that, verses 2 and 3. You need to do that, David, because the enemy, look at verse 2, for look, the wicked bend their bow. The enemy is set to shoot at you, David. They make ready their arrow on a string, that they may shoot secretly at the upright in heart. In other words, he's saying, what the enemy is doing is, the enemy is set to shoot at you. I don't know that that's literal. It may have been literal, but it's the idea in the picture of an enemy. His bow is set, the string is pulled, and they're going to shoot at you in the dark, David. And that's why you need to flee. I want you to pay particular attention to verse 3, because this is the foundation of our study. At verse 3, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? Keep in mind, that's still the advice of the friend. This is not David speaking at verse 3. This is what I feel and this is what I think I'll do. But this is the advice of the friends. Here's why you need to flee, David, because the enemy is set to shoot. And after all, when the foundation is destroyed, David, there is nothing that you can do. There's absolutely nothing you can do. Because the question is rhetorical. What can the righteous do? We'll talk more about those foundations in just a moment. Now, here was David's reaction to that. He had already said at verse 1, in the Lord I will put my trust. So beginning at verse 4 through verse 7, David's confidence is in the Lord. The friends are focused on the fact there's nothing you can do, David. There's nothing you can do. Just run away. Flee. Get out of here. Your enemies are against you. They're shooting at you in the darkness of the night. And David, the foundations are gone. What can you do? So David said this, beginning at verse 4. David said, the Lord is on his throne and he's in control. I haven't forgotten that. Look at verse 4. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold. His eyelids test the sons of men. What are you saying, David? I'm saying God's on his throne and he's in control and I haven't forgotten that. Verse 5 and verse 6. David said, I understand and I have trust and I have confidence in God that God will punish those who are wicked. That in God's my enemy. Be it Saul, be it Absalom, whoever it may be. The Lord tests the righteous. The wicked and the one who loves violence his soul hates. David said, I take confidence in that. The enemy, he says to his friend, who has that arrow pointed in my direction and the bow is bent and the string is pulled. And as darkness falls and the arrows are shooting, I know what God's going to do. Verse 6, upon the wicked he will rain coals, fire and brimstone and a burning wind. That shall be the portion of their cup. Oh, the Lord's going to pour out wrath upon those who are the enemies. Let them do what they wish to me. I have confidence in the Lord. He is in control. He is on his throne, and he will punish the wicked. And then he closes at verse 7 saying, I know this too, that God will remember the one who is righteous. For the Lord is righteous, and he loves righteousness. Let's remember who our God is. He is a righteous God, and he loves righteousness. So therefore, his countenance beholds the upright. Since he is a righteous God and he loves righteousness, then he rewards those who are righteous. And David is saying that I have confidence that if I am righteous, the Lord will not forget that. He will not forget that at all. Leupold observed that David, we say, has taken refuge in the Lord. And there he proposes to stay. Flee he will not. We have here a psalm of trust. This is a psalm of trust. David said, I trust in the Lord, and that's where I'm going to stay. I don't intend to leave that. Now, David's world of turmoil, what was it? Well, we don't know what this psalm is talking about, but there are some things we know about the turmoil that David went through. We remember, we'll not take the time to trace the reference in 1 Samuel 23, but we remember that Saul had pursued and had attempted to kill David more than once. Perhaps that's the enemy that is after him and that is pursuing him, and the bow is bent and the string is pulled. I don't know. That may be it. Very likely it could have been Saul. Saul was an enemy that was after David. David battles more than one occasion to keep the throne. There was Absalom, his own son, who conspired to take the throne from him, 2 Samuel chapters 15 and 16. Whoever is under consideration, the enemy used these circumstances and these situations against him and are rejoicing in that. Not only would he have the enemy of Saul or the enemy of Absalom, but then there are other enemies who rejoice that Absalom is against him and Saul has turned against him. David has a world of turmoil. Verse 2 again. David's world of turmoil is pictured as one who is about to be shot. If you could imagine. When you feel like your world is upside down, and it may not be literal, but if you feel like somebody is pointing right at you with an arrow or a gun, and they're about to shoot you. And notice the three descriptions that he gives in verse 2. He said that they have bent the bow. They not only are threatening me, but the bow is already bent. They're ready with their arrow, according to verse 2. They make ready their arrow on the string. And then he says, they prepare to shoot in the cover of darkness. And he said, that's the way I feel. And I am being targeted, and my world is upside down. And his enemies say there's nothing they can do. I want us to focus at verse 3 where we said we would go. Verse 3, if the foundations were destroyed, what can the righteous do? This verse is quoted quite frequently. And many times when it is quoted in the context as if this was a statement from God or if this was a statement from David. But we need to understand this is part of what continues as the word of the ill advisors, his friends. This is what his friend is saying. Go back to verse 2. His friend was saying, look, they're shooting at you with a bow. And then the friend goes on to say that if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? Let's focus on this idea that if the foundations are destroyed. Again, these are the words of the ill advisors. The foundations have reference to the moral principles and the moral fibers on which society rests. The very foundations of justice and righteousness and principles of honesty, Albert Barnes observed, the reference is to destruction of those things in a community. When truth is no longer respected, when justice is no longer practiced, when fraud and violence have taken the place of honesty and honor, when error prevails, when a character for integrity and virtue afford no longer any security. This is supposed to be the case in the circumstances referred to in the psalm. When there is no respect paid for truth and justice, and when righteousness, therefore, could find no security, it is under these circumstances the advice is given in Psalm 11 in verse 1 that the righteous should seek safety in flight. Do you ever feel that way? Do you ever feel like we're living in a society where justice is gone? Where fairness no longer exists? Where error prevails? Integrity, honor, and truth are ridiculed? When the foundations are destroyed, Brother Haley observed, the psalm pictures dark times. Evil people are in control. Wrong is in the saddle riding roughshod over what's right. You feel that way? I feel that way sometimes. I feel like evil is in control. Evil people are in power. They control us and are seeking to control us, and they run roughshod over what's right and what's righteous and principles of truth. The foundations are gone. But the enemy said, not the enemy, but the friend said to David, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? What can the righteous do? Well, it is true. I think we have to recognize that when the foundation, the moral principles are gone, we are in trouble. David recognized that. And that's what the friend is saying to David. When the foundation, the moral fiber of society is gone, we are in trouble, David. We are in trouble. And that is true. But it is implied by the advisor that the righteous can do nothing at all. And he might as well give up and flee. Go back to let's look at verses 1 through 3 again and get the picture, setting the pace for the rest of our study. Starting at verse 3, and I want you to capture what he's saying by the time we get to verse 3. He said, "In the Lord I'll put my trust," in contrast now to what he's about to quote. "How can I say," he's saying to his friend, "how can I say what you're telling me to do? How can I say to my soul, flee as a bird to the mountain? For look, the wicked bend their bow and make ready their arrow on a string, that they may shoot secretly at the upright in heart. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do?" See what the friend has advised him? David, when the moral fiber of society is gone and you've got all these enemies against you and leaders like Saul or be it your own son, your own family, Absalom, are doing what they do, what on earth can you do? Let's raise that same question for us. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? And David's answer is this. He said, you can do what I do. You can put your trust in God. That's what you can do. Start back at verse 1. In the Lord I will put my trust. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? They can put their trust in God. And that's what David talks about in verses 4 to 7. So let's talk about three principles we learn from the psalm. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? They can put their trust in God and recognize, as David did, that God is in control. When somebody says to you, well, it's all gone, the foundations are erased, the world is upside down, it's not going to turn back. There's not a thing on earth you can do about it. And therefore, since you can't do anything, you might as well just flee and get away and just forget it all. David said, oh no, I'm going to remember this principle. I'm going to recognize God is in control. Look at verse 4. David said, I understand this principle. The Lord is in His holy temple. The Lord is in His holy temple, he said. In other words, David is saying there's nothing to fear. I'm really not that afraid of Saul. I'm not afraid of Absalom or my enemies, whoever they may be. And the reason for that is I recognize God is on His throne. He is in His temple. There is nothing to fear. He is in His temple of holiness. He is in His temple of righteousness. God, who is the protector of the foundations of verse 3, is always in heaven and He's always accessible. We need to understand. Let's turn to Hebrews, the 4th chapter, if you will. The point being made in Hebrews chapter 4 is that there are going to be some troubles and trials and tribulations along the way. The point being made is, I may picture the parallel in chapters 3 and 4 of the book of Hebrews, is just as Israel came out of their Egyptian bondage and wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, making their way toward their promised land, likewise, we have come out of our bondage of sin, and we're in our wilderness now, making it toward our promised land. We're not there yet. Now, many of them fell from discouragement in the midst of the wilderness. Don't let that happen to you. So his point in chapter 4 is, as you're journeying through your wilderness, making your way toward the promised land, you're going to face trials and tribulations and discouragements. Beginning now at verse 14 of chapter 4, he said, "Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but in all points was tempted like as we, yet without sin." He understands the trial you go through. He understands the problems you go through. He's on His throne. He's in His temple. So what do you do? Verse 16, "Let us come boldly to the throne of grace that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." He's in His temple. Look at verse 4 again. David said at verse 4, "I understand this too. I put my trust in the Lord." You can tell me to flee if you want to, but he said, the Lord is in His temple and the Lord's throne is in heaven. He said, the Lord's throne is in heaven. It reminds us of chapter 4, the book of Revelation. No greater chapter in the entire book of Revelation than chapter 4, that throne scene. And the ultimate point, as you well recognize, as you study through the book of Revelation, in the midst of the upheaval in society, as Domitian seems to have that upper hand, is that God is on his throne and he is in control. The emphasis is not on the descriptions of the angelic host or of the throne itself. To say the Lord God Almighty, verse 8, created the universe that he could control, verse 11, is still on that throne and he is in control of all things. That's what David is saying. David is saying, when the foundations are destroyed, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put my trust in God. God is in control. He is in his temple. He's on his throne. Look again at verse 4. He says, his eyes behold. His eyelids test the sons of men. But that's an interesting statement. His eyes behold. What does he mean, his eyes behold? Well, he's not ignorant of what the enemy does. Do you ever feel like that people are doing things in society? Maybe it's the leaders of our nation. Maybe it's our coworkers. It may be your boss. Maybe family members that are doing things that you think, you know what? They're getting away with murder. And no one is paying any attention to all the evil that they do. They're allowed to just go on and on and on and do whatever they want to do, and they're never punished for that. David said, his eyes behold. God is not ignorant of what the enemy does, nor is he ignorant of what we need, nor does he ignore us when we do what's right. You ever feel like you struggle to do what's right and you're trying hard to do and you don't get any credit for it? Do you ever feel like that no one notices the efforts that you make? And I took a stand for what was right. I did the right thing under this circumstance. I stood up for the cause, or I stood up for my family. I did the right thing and no one even noticed. David said, his eyes behold. God sees that. In fact, in Romans chapter 2 and in verse 16, God will judge even the secrets of men. He notices things no one else knows. The injustice that you saw that no one else saw, and you think, they got away with it. God caught that. He saw it. The right thing that you did, and no one took notice or even knew, God saw it. He caught that. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and in verse 5. Paul, writing to the Corinthians, said in verse 5, therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord comes. And notice what's going to happen when the Lord comes. Who will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness and reveal the counsels of the heart? All those hidden things of darkness that no one else knows or sees, God's going to bring them to light. And the things of the hearts of men, God's going to bring them to light. His eyes behold. David, what do you do when the foundations are destroyed? I put my trust and my confidence in God, that God is in control. He's in his temple. He's on his throne. In his eyes behold, he sees all things. David, what do you do when the foundations are destroyed? I put my trust and my confidence in God, that God will punish the ungodly. Remember that in verses 5 and 6? God will punish the ungodly, he says. Look at verse 5 of our psalm. Verse 5. David said that the Lord hates the wicked. Notice he said, he tests the righteous and the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. What does David mean by that? Well, God hates sin. Let's remind ourselves of one of the passages that we all are familiar with in Proverbs chapter 6, if you will. In fact, you probably can quote much of it, if not all of it, in Proverbs 6. That there are six things the Lord hates, he despises. And yea, seven are an abomination to him. There are some things that turn God's stomach. Things like a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that are that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans and feet that are swift to run to evil, and a false witness that speaks lies, and one that sows discord among brethren. Have you ever been around any of those kind of people and you think, man, they're getting away with it? Somebody's proud and arrogant when you try to be humble. Or they're lying, they're deceiving when you try to tell the truth. They devise evil plans when you're trying to do what's right. Their feet are swift to run to mischief and to do evil, and they're false witness, and they sow discord among brethren. Cause turmoil among God's people. Proverb writer said, the Lord hates that. David well understood that sin separates from God, Isaiah 59, verses 1 and 2. Your sins have separated you and your God, and so therefore God hates the wicked, he said, in that sense. That he hates them in the sense he hates their sin, and it separates. They're no longer in a relationship with God. And what David is saying in verse 5 is the Lord has no toleration for evil. Maybe that I put my trust in God is what I'm doing. When the foundations are destroyed and the moral fiber of our society is gone, what I do is I trust in my God. He'll take care of those who are wicked. God will take care of those people and bring them down. Now, verse 6, here's what God will do. God will rain fire and brimstone upon them. Look at verse 6. He said, upon the wicked he'll rain coals, fire and brimstone, and a burning wind. A reference to Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't think he means by that upon any wicked God's going to bring fire and brimstone like he did Sodom and Gomorrah. But he's using Sodom and Gomorrah to look at the wickedness of this city. And of those cities round that were destroyed in that destruction of Genesis chapter 19, when God took down those cities with fire and brimstone, God will do the same thing with any wicked people. Evidence? Look at New Testament references where Sodom and Gomorrah are used, and it's in the context of false teaching and false teachers usually. And just as God took care of Sodom and Gomorrah, he's going to take care of these people. Look at Jude, look at 2 Peter 2, and any other reference to Sodom and Gomorrah in the New Testament. In other words, God will destroy and he will punish those who are wicked. In other words, what the psalmist is saying is the sinner doesn't get off scot-free. And we need to remember that. When you see somebody getting away with things that you think, they're getting off scot-free. Oh, no, they're not. Oh, no, they're not. And when the very moral fiber of our society is rotted away and worn thin, and you think, what can I do? What can the righteous do? What can we do? Put your trust that God will take care of it in time, because he will, according to verse 6. Now, here's the third thing I learned. God is in control, David said. That's where my confidence is. And God will punish the wicked. That's where my confidence is. I'll put my trust in the Lord. David said, there's one more thing, though, that I recognize God will reward those who are righteous. It's found in verse 7. God will do that. God will take care of those who are righteous. Look at verse 7. He said, the Lord himself is righteous. The Lord is righteous. He himself is righteous. And therefore, the righteous have nothing to fear, is the point. You tell me to flee, verse 2, verse 1. And you tell me it's because I'm being shot at or about to be shot at, that the string is already pulled and the darkness is falling and they're going to shoot at me in the darkness of the night. That's what you're telling me? And you're telling me I need to flee because there's nothing I can do, verse 3, when the moral fiber of society is rotted away and gone? David said, I trust in the Lord because he's righteous. And that means if he is righteous, that the righteous people have nothing to fear. Verse 7 again. He goes on to say, and he loves righteousness. He loves righteousness. Not only is God righteous himself, but he loves righteousness. Let's turn over just a few psalms, if you will, to the 33rd psalm. And in verse 5, he loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the goodness of the Lord. The Lord loves righteousness. He has an admiration for righteousness because that's his character. He is righteous himself. And that means, therefore, he loves those who are righteous. David is saying that if I'm striving to be righteous, let him shoot. Let him shoot at me. Let them do what they will. I'm not going to flee. I'm going to put my trust and my confidence in the Lord because I'm righteous. And the Lord is righteous and He loves righteousness. Now notice finally, He says at the end of verse 7, His countenance beholds the upright. The Lord sees those who are righteous and He takes, just like He sees the wicked, verses 5 and 6, and He'll take care of them. They don't get off scot-free. Neither do the righteous go unnoticed. The righteous do not go unnoticed. Now, we know that principle, and if this were a Bible class and I were to call on you, what about the righteous? What will God do? Well, you would have to acknowledge and would. God notices that. But we sometimes feel like He doesn't notice. I'm trying to do what's right. I'm struggling with my faith at times. And I wonder if anybody's noticing. Does anybody care? And David said, He beholds those who are upright. 2 Timothy 4 tells us that the crown of victory awaits those who are righteous. The Lord, who is the righteous judge, will give us in the last day. Oh yeah, the Lord took note. In Romans chapter 2, beginning at verse 4, glory and honor and incorruption comes to those who are righteous. Now I want to close with one last verse over in 2 Peter chapter 3. Turn there with me if you will. In 2 Peter, we see that hope is left. Hope rests. Verses 11 to 13, the hope of heaven is for those who are godly, but that hope also causes us to live a godly life. Let's pick up beginning at verse 11. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, since you see that earth and all things therein will be burned up, verses 9 and 10, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? See what kind of person you ought to be? When you realize this is not all there is, verse 10, this world and all things therein are going to be burned up, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? Now notice verse 12, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, there's the hope, look for a new heaven and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. See the point? What the psalmist is saying back in Psalm 11 is, you see, God's going to reward the righteous. And how do I know that, David? I know that because God is righteous and He loves righteousness and He beholds those who are upright. He takes note of that. So let's go back to verse 3 to close. If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? It's a good question. It was raised by the friends of David. And implied in their question was, there is nothing you can do. And David's response to that is, oh yes, there is something I can do. Verse 1, I will put my trust in the Lord. And here's how I put my trust. I recognize God is in control. He's on His throne. He's in His temple. And His eyes behold. And then he said, you know what, I recognize also that God will punish the ungodly. They don't get off scot-free. God takes note of that. And He'll rain fire and brimstone upon them. And I also know this, David said, that God will reward those who are righteous. He's righteous. He loves righteousness. And He beholds those who are upright. David said, I'll tell you what I'll do. When the foundations are destroyed, I'll put my trust in the Lord. What a statement of trust. David has found his trust in God, and there he intends to stay. What a statement that we learn from Psalm 11. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins? Would you acknowledge your faith in Christ? Be buried in the water.